You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to HearstRanch.com. Welcome to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. And before I even talk about what I normally talk about tonight, I want to just do a quick plug, a little family plug. My cousin, Steve Klein, is the producer of a film called Make Believe. It's a documentary that won... What did it win? It won something in the LA Film Festival. But it's here in New York this week at Cinema Village, and it's also in Chicago at Facets Cinematheque from May 16th to 30th. And Make Believe is a documentary that follows six teenage magicians as they kind of work their way along to... They're preparing to compete in the World Teen Magic Championships in Las Vegas. Now, I always, you know, thought that those kid magicians were kind of dorky, and this, they are seriously dorky, but they're some of the most charming, interesting, complex kids, and this is one of the best documentaries I have ever seen, and I'm not just saying that because Steve's my cousin. It's really an incredibly great film. It's a great story. It's beautifully put together. It's just a fantastic film, so I highly recommend it. Just watching the story of these kids who are so socially awkward and you know, at that horrible stage in life where they have no idea who they really are. But then when they kind of slip into their magician mode, it's like everything slips away and they really sort of have this persona and they can really kind of shine. And it's just a great, great film. So plugging that for Steve, but also for J. Clay Tweel, who directed it too. And it's a great film. And you should go. So it's at Cinema Village only until Thursday here in New York on 12th Street. And like I said, in Chicago at Facets Cinematheque, May 16th to 30th. And then it's supposed to go national, I think. I'm not sure what their distribution deal is. Netflix doesn't have it, but you can request it for the future. Something like that. Anyway, that's that. Go see it. It's totally worth it. So, welcome to Why We Cook. Did you ever feel like you're drowning in your stuff? Like everything you own is just bearing down on you and like you can't get rid of it all. And then no matter what you do, you just keep getting more stuff. You know, like you think like, okay, I'm going to be a minimalist and get rid of everything and I'll own five things and that's it. Or you read articles about people doing that. And then you just can't. It's like one of those ridiculous paradoxes of the developed world. It's like we're drowning in our own stuff and we keep making more stuff and we keep buying more stuff. We have more stuff than we know what to do with, you know, while kids in like Africa amuse themselves with, you know, a tin can, kicking that around like that's their one possession. I know that's an exaggeration, but there's just so much stuff and so much junk. And what are you supposed to do with all of it? You know, and forget it if you're the least bit sentimental, which I happen to be very sentimental, then it's almost impossible to part with any of your stuff because every object has meaning and emotion attached to it and is significant. And how could you get rid of those sorts of things? But I've gotten better, mostly because I live with someone who's the opposite. He can't stand clutter. And so it's forced me to winnow, to be more cutthroat and get rid of my stuff. And I've gotten a lot better. Not as good as him. I mean, he's like ruthless about stuff. Yet also strangely sentimental and somewhat of a pack rat too, but in a very organized, minimalist way. So we have a lot of stuff, but it's like carefully curated stuff. It's a lifetime of carefully curated stuff, you know, times two. And I was thinking about all of this stuff and my stuff and what happens to your stuff when you're gone. And I was visiting my mom in Florida a couple weeks ago and looking around her apartment thinking like, holy crap, all this stuff is going to be my stuff one day. And I don't even want most of this stuff. What am I going to do with it? You can't really have a garage sale in a condo community in Florida. I don't think they're allowed. I'm already panicking about what to do with all her stuff. So part of why I've been thinking about this is because my friend's mother died. I went to her shiva last night. So if you don't know what a shiva is, it's like when Jews die, you have the funeral right away, and then you spend a week sitting around your house mourning, and people come over to take care of you. Basically, so shiva calls, you go to someone's house to kind of hang out with them and eat too much cake with them and just kind of comfort them and keep them company so that the family of the dead person doesn't, you know, they don't have to be alone. They don't have to think about cooking for themselves. It's nice. It's a really nice ritual. So her mom died, and I went yesterday out to New Jersey to the mom's house, where I had never been. I'd actually never met her mom, which is too bad because people said really great things about her, and I'm sorry I never met her. But walking into this house, it was like walking into a parallel universe of my life, of the house that I grew up in. It was like the same house. It was the same Danish modern furniture, some of the same pieces from the early 60s, same kind of earthenware, ceramics everywhere, same dishes, same kind of walls filled with art done by the daughter, same thing in our house. Basically the same house, almost the same layout, same era, same like size lot, everything. You know, basically the house of the liberal, artsy, middle-class, socialist-leaning Jews purchased sometime in the post-war suburban years. Not like social climber type affluent Jews, more like I said, more intellectual, liberal, you know, maybe teachers or people like that. It was like the same exact house. It was very weird. And it was filled with the same stuff, same kind of stuff. And my friend's mom, Miriam, she died at home in her sleep, very peacefully, which is good. She was well into her 80s. And the house had this very kind of strange, poignant feel that a place has when it's fully inhabited, you know, yet that person's not there anymore. Like maybe she had just gone out shopping or was taking a nap or something. It felt like a house that somebody lived in. It didn't have that feeling yet of emptiness in it. And some of us who were there were commenting on it. Like she had lost a lot of her sight, and so she had a chair very close to the TV where she used to sit, and there was like a crumpled up tissue by the arm of the chair, you know, that I guess she had just left there that night before she went to sleep. You know, and books sitting around. And the thing that I found the most poignant was there was trash there. Like there was garbage in the bin and all her recycling was separated out, and she had a compost, like a little bucket of compost. And a lot of people commented on that, about how she was this avid recycler and composter, and it was still sitting there, which I thought, so there was something very touching about that. And I loved the fact that she was this 80 something year old person who really believed in all that. She recycled, she composted, you know, right up until the night that she died. And I love that. You know, I think it's sort of a fitting ending for someone. I mean, I would like to be composted when I die. I would like to be turned into compost and used to fertilize someone's tomatoes. I think that's a nice way to do it. And her refrigerator was full of food, you know, because she was living and eating in that house. And the fridge door kept opening because people were taking out things, and I kept seeing stuff in there, and I thought, oh, there's a nice-looking pear. Oh, there's some interesting-looking food. And I thought, why would you choose to die when you still had such nice fruit in your refrigerator? Or that big block of cream cheese. Who's going to eat it? You can't die if you have nice food still in your fridge. And the funny thing was, at this shiva, you know, you always bring food. Some families will have it catered, but often, you know, you bring food. You don't want the family to have to think about that. You're supposed to bring something. So I brought mini black and white cookies. I'm not really sure why. I just thought they seemed kind of comforting and appropriate. And people love them. People always get excited by the black and white cookie. But every time the fridge was opened to get out, you know, milk for coffee or something, I looked in there and I looked at all that stuff, and I thought, now what? Maybe somebody should start up a little business of going into the homes of the recently departed and cooking up everything that they couldn't get to before they, you know, slipped these earthly bonds and left us for the land of no expiration dates. You know, someone like me could go into the house while everyone's off at the funeral before you come back for your Shiva and just go crazy using up everything in the fridge. It would save the family money on catering. The guests wouldn't have to bring stuff that people might not want to eat, like tons of cake. It would clean out the fridge so that the family wouldn't have to deal with that weeks later. You could put out a whole buffet of dishes that reflected the food tastes of the dearly departed, right? No overpriced lox platter from the deli or, you know, terrible kosher cookies. Just a personalized spread of customized food direct from the last grocery shopping trip. It's kind of a good idea, right? We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, more about stuff and food.
Is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Greenhorn Radio, hosted by Severin von Scharner Fleming, every Thursday at 2 p.m. Greenhorn Radio is radio for young farmers by young farmers. Helmed by acclaimed activist, farmer, and documentarian Severin Fleming, Greenhorn Radio is a weekly phone interview session surveying America's cutting edge under 40 farmers. Again, that's every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef's Marty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host. So I was talking about how I went to my friend's mom's Shiva last night, and I was struck by the food in the fridge. You know, you die, but the food stays in your fridge once you're gone. And what do you do with it? And I was thinking, like, it would be a great idea to have a business where you come in and you cook up food that's left behind in someone's fridge for their family to eat during their Shiva. Great idea. Now, I can't get rid of things. I'm trying. Like I said earlier, I'm working on it. I'm not a hoarder. I'm not going to be on that cable TV show about hoarders, but it takes me a while to get rid of things. Like old t-shirts that have things on them. Like I have a Cramps t-shirt from the 80s that I got when I saw the Cramps at the Ritz. It's unwearable, but I can't get rid of that. It's like a piece of history, you know, or like all my notebooks from college. What if I want to look at them one day? But the ironic thing is that having a fridge full of slowly rotting food kind of makes me crazy. I don't like when I have a fridge with a ton of food in it and the food's not getting cooked or eaten. Like, just knowing that I do will sometimes make me get up early in the morning and start cooking it. Just knowing that it's in there. It's like this anxiety of knowing that the clock is ticking. You know, some people have the biological clock. I have the biological decay of food clock. That, you know, the eggs are getting old and the cheese mold can only be scraped off a few more times. And yet I also leave things in my fridge for a really long time too. Like much, much longer than is recommended by, you know, the industrial food complex who... You know, and your government who likes to tell you to throw things out, put expiration dates. Expiration dates are for suckers who like wasting money. Expiration dates don't mean a thing to me. I like to leave things in there a long time. And yet, if I have a fridge full of a lot of fresh stuff, I have to cook it right away. Nothing is really bad in my fridge until you can really smell it or it has red mold. If your food has red mold, throw it out. That's where you have to draw the line. Red mold will make you sick. Blue mold, green mold, just scrape it off. You're okay. But I think that letting food get kind of old in your fridge is good for us. I think it strengthens our immune systems and makes us more resilient. I think that, you know, there was a time when we ate our food in a much riper state of age. You know, with days before refrigeration, before preservation, where you had a choice. You had your food, you either ate it, you figured out how to preserve it, or you just took your chances. Because hunger breeds desperation, and if something's kind of old but you're hungry enough, you'll eat it. But I think it made us stronger, if anything. And our fridge is always full of really kind of weird odds and ends and bits of things because I'm always bringing home stuff from work. I can't stand to see things get thrown away after there's been work put into it or there's, you know, a lot of something left over that we can't reuse. So, like, if my class, you know, roasts garlic and they're not going to use it, I'll take it home because I know it'll keep. Or, you know, if they've diced up a ton of turnips for something. They did this the other day. They did a whole bunch of these braised turnips and they didn't get used, so I took those turnips home and I used them. And then I like the challenge, you know, of making something basically out of nothing, out of garbage. You know, things that otherwise would have wound up in the trash, I take them home. So instead of going out and spending my hard-earned money on virgin foodstuffs, I like to recycle what I find in my fridge and what I can kind of scavenge at work. I mean, if only I could keep pigs in my apartment or in the backyard, you know, then it would be great because I would have this endless source of food for them, all these food scraps. Like up at the Culinary Institute of America, they separate all their food waste and they give it to Hudson Valley farmers to feed their pigs, you know, but school where I teach is in Manhattan. We can't really do that. So, you know, I wish I had pigs. I mean, that's why pigs are such brilliant farm animals, because you don't actually have to raise food to feed your pigs. You just give them scraps and you don't need grass for them to graze on. You just give them leftovers and then maybe, like, you know, some bruised apples that you couldn't sell now and then. And then they're happy. They grow fat and they grow happy and then they turn into prosciutto. So they're really perfect. They're like perfect little eating machines. And so last night at the Shiva, I just wanted to get into that fridge really badly. I wanted to honor my friend's mom by using up the food that she had taken the time and money to buy for herself. I mean, I know some of it will get used. I know my friend and her siblings will probably stay there for a while. They're going to have to sort out her stuff and do all that awful stuff that comes with, you know, getting rid of a lifetime of possessions, divide it up, get rid of it, get the house ready to sell or whatever. I have no idea what they're planning on doing with it, but, you know, they'll be there. And hopefully they'll use up some of that stuff in the fridge, but maybe what I'll do is offer to come out there one night next week and just cook it all up for them as a way of kind of honoring their mom and honoring, you know, her, the choices she made in the food that she bought in the last couple of months of her life. I didn't feel like it would be appropriate for me to just start pulling it all out of the fridge then and there, you know, making a mess while everybody was sitting around drinking coffee and eating black and white cookies. Maybe next week would be better. So today when I was teaching, we're in our like French regional module right now. And, you know, what I try to emphasize to them when we're doing this is that the things that we're cooking are foods that people came up with or, you know, that evolved out of necessity, maybe desperation, hunger, but, you know, necessity. So today we were in southwestern France and we were making cassoulet. So if you don't know what cassoulet is, it's this dish from Gascony, which is basically a big pot of beans, white beans or flageolet beans, cooked for a really long time with little bits of salted cured meats. So the idea is you have this big pot of beans and then you flavor it with little bits of sausage and duck confit and, you know, smoked pork, little bits of it. And then that stretches and feeds your whole big, you know, French Catholic family with all your many children. Of course, now this is, you know, the modern world, so we put a lot more meat into it. So it's still a huge pot of beans, but now it has tons and tons of meat cooked into it too. So we made cassoulet today, and yesterday we had cooked all this duck confit, and we made this cabbage salad with chestnuts. It was good, like really rustic stuff, a Basque poulet sauté. It was great. I think it's one of the best lessons that we do in our regional French module. But, you know, we cooked off all these beans to make our cassoulet. And beans, to me, I've done whole shows on beans. Beans are really like a miracle food, if you think about it. Like, they're really easy to grow. And then you pick them and you dry them out. And then they last forever. Like, literally will last. If you keep them dry, they will last forever. Until you bring them back to life. It's like you put them into a coma. And then you bring them back to life. Suspended animation. Then they come back to life and you cook them. And then you get these, like, amazing, delicious things. Out of what were previously, like, little hard pebbles. And they're full of protein. And you could survive on them. I mean, it's no wonder people in huge parts of the world survive on bean-based diets. So we cooked up all these beans for our cassoulet. I was trying to extol the miracle of the bean, but it was kind of lost on this crowd today. But we cooked way too many beans. Like, somebody screwed up in the measuring when they were soaking the beans, and we wound up with like 5 extra pounds of cooked beans. So, of course, what did I do? I packed them up in containers and I brought them home along with all of this other stuff that I salvaged, like extra onions that they had chopped and extra carrots and some little bits of pancetta that they had cooked and didn't use. And, you know, various other scraps. I sort of did my scavenging, you know, like a pig in a barnyard. I sort of picked up all the little scraps and I brought it all home. And when I got home, before I sat down to write the show tonight, I sweated out the onions and the pancetta and I added the beans and the carrots and I simmered. And voila, a nice big fat gallon of white bean soup made basically out of garbage. Not garbage, but potentially unused scrap and a lot of extra beans that were just going to wind up in the waste stream. And it was perfect to make this pot of white bean soup because it's been raining nonstop for 5 days, although the sun actually just came out, which is a huge shocker. But the thought of all those beans, all that like potential protein food energy going into the garbage today made me feel sadder than I felt at the Shiva last night, and I couldn't bear it. So I rescued those beans today from the landfill, and tonight at Shea Smarty Pants, it is bean soup night, made from the scavenged white beans. And then I was also kind of scavenging around today while I was cooking or while I was working, and I scavenged something that I like to call duck platinum. And the only reason I say platinum is because platinum is more valuable than gold, I think, although gold is way up. I don't know what platinum is trading for these days. I know gold went way up, even though duck gold sounds way better. So what is this substance that I speak of? Well, we made confit, and I've talked about confit here before. I did a whole show on confit maybe a year and a half or so ago. When you cook duck confit, you're cooking duck legs in their own fat. So you basically cure them with salt for a few days and then you cook them in fat really, really slowly. And all the moisture in the duck cooks out and the fat like replaces the moisture and cooks the duck. And then what you're supposed to do is leave the duck totally immersed in that fat, put it somewhere cold and leave it for a couple months to ripen. So it gets really funky. Sort of like ripening cheese or wine. It gets like better and better. But what also happens sometimes in this confit is that if you cook it, but you don't cook all the moisture out of the duck, what happens is there's like duck juice. And that duck juice gets really, really, really concentrated. And because fat is lighter than water, as this whole thing cools down, all the fat floats up. And any water that's left in there sinks to the bottom. And when you chill this whole giant tub of solidified duck in its own fat, at the bottom is this layer of this miraculous jellied stuff that's like pure reduced duck gloss, like duck essence. And that part to me tastes better than the confit itself, is that jellied stuff. Like, you couldn't buy that stuff if you tried. You have to make it. And you can only make it by going through this like multi-day, multi-step process. So we had to repack the confit because we used some of it today, and then we were saving some of it to ripen. And I feel sort of a heel, but I didn't tell my students about it, about the jelly at the bottom. I just took it. Normally, I point it out to them, and I say, oh, yeah, guys, you should taste this. This is really great. But I don't know. For some reason, I was feeling a little melancholy. It was raining. Something in me snapped, and I said, you know what? Screw them. I'm taking all the duck jelly home for myself today. And so I scraped it all off of the bottom of this block of duck fat, and I packed it up, and I brought it home. And some of it might go into the bean soup tonight, but some of it might just go onto my toast in the morning. Toast with duck jelly for breakfast, I think, sounds pretty good tomorrow morning. So the soup tonight was, you know, made from stuff that would have potentially wound up in the garbage. And I read this statistic somewhere recently that said something like 40% of the garbage in the U.S. is made up of consumer food waste. 40% of our garbage is food waste. That's just sick. I mean, think about how much of that could be composted, how much could be fed to pigs, how much food we're just wasting all the time. So I feel good that I made this soup out of stuff that otherwise would have wound up in the garbage. And I feel like even though I may not get to go back out to New Jersey to cook the stuff left in the refrigerator, in a way I was sort of paying homage to that way, in some weird indirect way. I never knew my friend's mom, but I think that's probably the kind of thing she would have liked. She was probably thrifty. I'm thrifty. She's thrifty. She was probably a thrifty lady. So just to change the subject here briefly, last week I was talking about gardening, and I was telling you guys about the community garden that we've put up in a tiny bungalow land. And the community garden that's, you know, is kind of slowly taking shape. And so I had planted a whole bunch of stuff, and my seeds started coming up. It was very exciting. On Saturday, I looked, and, you know, a lot of my seeds have come up, and I had transplanted things that I had started from seed over the winter, and they took, and everything was going great, and I put in all these new seeds. And now we've had, like, nonstop torrential rain since Saturday, and by Sunday, the rain had gotten so bad that the whole area had flooded, and I'm afraid that the garden boxes are gonna just like float up and like float away by the time I get back there next week. So I want to keep giving you like continuous updates on the community garden, but I'm a little concerned about all this rain. We have a drainage situation that we need to address up there. The garden was built in a spot that really is kind of like a swamp. Like, there were cattails growing there, which is a pretty good sign of a wetland. So it wasn't the best spot to put it in. So I fear the worst. Hopefully it'll dry out a little bit up there. It's not raining here now, so maybe it's not raining up there either. We're just about out of time. I just want to remind you about this film called Make Believe. Plug it again. My cousin's film. Amazing film. You should really try and go see it. It's incredible.
Hey, Erica.
Yes?
So the price of platinum is about $1,750 an ounce.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
Price of gold, about $1,500.
See, there you go. That's why it's called Duck Platinum, not Duck Gold. Wow, that's a lot. Everybody get out there and sell all your gold and platinum right now. That's really high. That's not really my area of expertise, though. I don't really know about gold. I only know about duck fat and duck jelly.
It's just what the internet told me.
Yeah, that's what the internet's for. We'd never know that otherwise. Anyway, go see my cousin's film, Make Believe. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com. as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Katie Kiefer with Behind the Scenes Food News for the week of May 11th. One of the most exciting things that I found in my trolling of trade blogs this week was the announcement of a new initiative called AgRE. That's capital A-G, small R-E-E. So it's sort of agriculture and green, I suppose, is the idea behind that. And the co-chairs include Dan Glickman, who is a former secretary of the USDA under Clinton, Gary Hirschberg, who is the president and CEO of Stonyfield Farm, Jim Mosley, who is a former deputy secretary at the USDA under George Bush, and Emmy Simmons, a former assistant administrator for economic growth, agriculture, and trade at the U.S. Agency for International Development. So this is kind of a mixed bag of political viewpoints here, which is what made me really sit up and take notice. It's funded by all the usual suspects like the Gates Foundation, the Ford Foundation, etc. But leading off in their first meeting, Glickman stressed the importance of involving all stakeholders and seeking common ground in addressing the need to feed a growing global population and doing so in ways that are environmentally, economically, and socially sustainable. And the eight foundations that are backing AgRE, he notes, agreed to set aside their political differences, as did the individual co-chairs, to develop research-based long-term solutions and strategies. I think this is a gigantic step in the right direction. I'm hoping that these guys will have a huge impact on the Farm Bill, which will be coming up again in 2012. So let's keep an eye on AgRE. If you want to read more about them and what they're doing and their news, they do have a website. It's www.foodandagpolicy.org. This has been Katie Kiefer with Behind the Scene Food News.
The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. In the next few weeks, Heritage Foods USA will be offering an interesting variety of amazing products, ranging from top quality seafood to their famous pork cuts. At the end of May, the Heritage team will go up to Maine to harvest fresh lobster with sustainable lobstermen. These delicious lobster are a perfect way to kick off the summer season. In the pork department, Heritage Foods USA will offer the maple-cured smoked boneless Heritage ham at an unbeatable price. This offer won't last long, so get them while you can. Place your order today at heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985. That's 718-389-0985 to place your order with Andrea or Ashley. And don't forget to sign up for the email list and to check them on Facebook and Twitter to get in on their new products, deals, and offers from Heritage Foods USA.